What's going on, all, and welcome back to another two-man pick-and-roll version of the Below the Rim podcast. Ian, sorry you just got to deal with me again. How are you feeling going into this?
You know, I've been in worse pairings before. It's funny, the pick-and-roll. I mean, I feel like we might be a give-and-go. Maybe a pick-and-pop. Right. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we're definitely not rolling. At minimum, it's a small pick-and-pop, but nobody's fucking around in the paint.
The only thing that's rolling is my ankles, probably.
Where would you rank us on the Luka LeBron pick and roll scale versus kind of the Fox Wemby? Do we fall right in the middle? Are we slight below? What's your thoughts so far?
Probably Luka LeBron, just because I'm closer in age physically to LeBron than any of the other guys mentioned. Like, I mean, between the two of us, the back and the joints and the ankles, like, it just would really concern me.
Listen, I got knees, neck, and hips, so, you know, all together, we're a highly functioning human.
Or yeah, you're rotating through the old man replacements.
Yeah, you know, definitely don't think we're replacement level centers for the Lakers after the Mark Williams drama. Speaking of, I think the only thing that I wanted to hit up top before we jump in the meat of today is the hoopla around the Lakers. Listen, nothing better than podcast content than a trade refusal. Mark Williams getting on a plane and meeting halfway with Dawson Connect in midair, high-fiving and going back to their teams. And then jerseys on every single chair on every single chair for Lakers fans. Don't think we have a lacking of excitement around the Luka fest.
No, we don't. And it's the only thing that trumps it really is the fan reaction that's been going on in Dallas. We've got coffins at the stadium. We've got fans getting thrown out. It's an absolute nightmare. I mean, at least the Lakers can hang their hat and be like, we set our team up for the next decade. The Mark Williams thing is crazy, though. I mean, I can't remember another time that a failed physical this late in the process prevented a trade. I mean, we've seen it kind of in the same day where, like, Woj or Shams will tweet out like, oh, so-and-so's in advanced talks, and then there will be a failed physical, trade falls apart, something like that. But it was a good like 3-4 days, right?
Yeah, and who do you think's more upset in this circumstance? I think putting myself in Charlotte's shoes, if you're going to make this trade, you think there's something really wrong with Mark Williams. Otherwise, at its face, it doesn't make a ton of sense. So do you think they get that call and they're like, damn, thought we were done with that problem. Now, what are we going to do with a guy that we don't know if can play basketball in 2 years? Or is the Lakers that is like, how are we supposed to compete for a championship this year?
Yeah, I think I feel worse for the Lakers. Like, I think it's embarrassing for Charlotte, but they're an NBA franchise. These teams take turns getting embarrassed, most of them. I mean, there's a few that escape that, but, you know, they'll be just fine. I kind of feel bad. Like, they're going to need to repair the relationship a little bit, but that team is so dismantled, and, like, their young studs aren't playing anyway, so it's like this year's a total wash. The Lakers, though, considering they made that, what, the night before the deadline, right? It was, like, midnight before the deadline. They probably would have gone out and tried to really fight for another center, whether it's Mitchell Robinson or Nick Claxton or another player who's not quite the caliber of Mark Williams on offense, but someone who can anchor the defense in the middle. They're not going to be able to find that on the buyout market. I think they got Alex Len playing tonight. I mean, that's not going to cut it. So it'll be interesting. I think that their small man lineup, like, you'd almost slide LeBron into the center position. That's pretty fun. Jackson Hayes looked exciting in the first game with Luka doing some, like, Lob City stuff, but also was against the Jazz, and it just, like, was pretty uninspiring in general. But, yeah, they're gonna have some issues if you think about who they have to go through in the West, too. Like, they're going to have some real problems with Jokic or Chet or some of these other guys at the top of the conference, but we'll have to see what happens.
It really is an interesting matchup-related circumstance, right, where you feel like if that small ball-type lineup went up against certain teams, it almost is advantage Lakers, right? And then there's others. I think I just add the Wolves to that as well, where they're just going to bully them both on the boards and getting to the paint. So it'll be interesting to see kind of a trial by fire here for JJ and year one of what can you do and how creative can you be from a lineup perspective to get the job done. And then the last note I wanted to add in terms of other things that are embarrassing, there's an awesome viral clip of the Mavs owner or general operating partner, right, walking into his courtside sits and being booed and looking around the arena super confused and turning to his party that's with him and says, are they booing me? It's like, dude, Of course they are. And I think it was a perfect microcosm of just like the lack of understanding of what the circumstances was going to dictate for the rest of the year for the Mavs. And it's already happened with the AD injury and obviously Gafford now. But my boy Max Christie balling out, that's an aside. But just the cloud that's going to hang over that franchise for not just this year, but for the next 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they might slip into the lottery. I mean, there's like a pretty good chance that they will now. The AD injury sucks. I mean, AD was like having such a good year too. I mean, regardless of them making a terrible trade, you know, you feel bad for him. They're so detached from reality. It's not even funny. Like Jason Kidd's not even doing media right now. Like I don't, not blaming him, but it sounds like he was blindsided by his leadership and ownership group. So top to bottom, total failure, but also the softness by which they're reacting to the fans is unacceptable, in my opinion. Like, if you want to make crazy moves, like, the fans are paying to be there. They're allowed. I mean, as long as they're not being violent or anything, obviously, they can boo all they want. They can call for firing you. I've been begging Jerry Reinsdorf to sell the Bulls for the better part of my lifetime. Like, this just is what it is.
It really is. And, you know, I think it's something that I don't understand the lack of leadership vision to understand not just the basketball and financial implications, but everything that was going to come with it. And I think that's the piece, you know, if I had to reflect right 7 days after now, right, we're 6 days after that. I think that's the piece that's the least surprising and the most surprising, the fan reaction being the least surprising and the most surprising being the lack of kind of astuteness in that leadership team to say, here are some of the other ramifications that we need to consider when we make a move like this.
For sure.
it's shocking to me.
Well, you know, the only person who's expressed any empathy is the one guy who doesn't even have to, and that's AD. Like, did you listen to his like intro press conference? He's like, you know, I know what it's like. You know, Luka meant so much to the city, all this stuff. He like waived his trade bonus. Like, he's like really putting his best foot forward for the fans. And like, I think Dallas's fans are intelligent enough to not like hold it against AD, obviously. I think that they'd probably be excited about him under any other circumstance. So I hope they find a way forward that doesn't suck. But you know who I feel really bad for is watching the Mavs play as Klay Thompson. I mean, like, what a freaking disaster that is. Like, you think, you know, you move on from the Warriors, you kind of have this trail into the sunset with Luka, kind of the perfect player to help extend your career. And now you're like carrying a shitty team into the lottery. That sucks. That just really sucks for him.
And I'm trying to make sure to check myself. And as such, we will not be talking about the Warriors on this podcast because it's only been 2 games. But Damn, does it make a lot of sense so far. That's all I'm going to say. And we'll revisit a week from now and see what's shaking in the Western Conference.
It looks really good.
It makes a lot of sense. All right. So surprisingly, there was actually basketball being played over the past week to 2 weeks in conjunction with the trade deadline and the Super Bowl and a lot of other hubbub going on in the world. And I thought we could go through kind of a little bit of a different exercise here where we catch up on some of the actions and teams' performance by going through some blind resumes. So what I'm going to do is give you some key indicators of teams. I'll give you kind of a time horizon record, maybe some opponents, and then give you a couple of guesses who that team might be and reflect on some of what's happened as we've kind of moved through this period of time. Make sense?
I like it.
Cool. All right. So first team we're going to start with, this team is 7-3 over their last 10, includes wins over Indy, Phoenix, twice, Orlando, Sacramento, and Milwaukee. They're the sixth rate defense in rating over that time and are playing arguably some of the best basketball in the NBA right now. Who do we think that team might be?
Western Conference.
Definitely a Western Conference team.
I'm going Memphis Grizzlies.
No. It is actually Portland.
Oh my God. Yeah, okay.
Portland is 7-3 over the last 10, skewed a little bit less in their defensive metrics with one big blowout against Denver, as well as OKC. So if you skew those two games out, they're actually the best defense in the NBA over the past 8 games. Who do you think their leading plus minus guy is over that time horizon?
It's definitely not DeAndre Ayton.
It's DeAndre Ayton, leading the team in plus minus, averaging 17 points. He's shooting 55%. He's averaging 4 offensive rebounds a game, 10 rebounds total, a little over a turnover a game, a steal, and a block. And
now he's out
has been, and now he happens to be out for a month, which obviously was a little bit challenging. But I wanted to give a little bit of time to Portland because they've been really, really solid. And those are no scrub teams that they've played against. I think it's a shame because now after last night, Ayton goes out as well as Scoot. But they've found something in terms of the roster construction, having big wings, helping guys really understand their roles. And I wanted to like bring it up with you because I didn't – does this mean anything? Is this something that we should consider as, okay, they're on the right path? Or is it, this is a nice story, they need bigger named guys, a bigger prize if they want to grow into anything as we go forward?
Yeah, I think it's a few things. I think it's really interesting. I can't believe that it was Portland, honestly. I almost been like embarrassed that I chose like an actual good team. I guess that proves to the listener that we did not pre-plan this at all.
Right. So no hints.
I think a few things. I think that they have done really well underrated in the draft the last few years. And I think that they've made some really nice moves around the margin. Obviously, we're huge Denny guys.
Huge.
He's had the best season of his career by far. Yeah. Like, most consistent. He's finally playing like 30 minutes a game, which is great. And he's been very, very good. But I think like they've really drafted well with like Kamara and Jaden Sharp and Anthony Simons. Like over the last like 5+ years, they've gotten some really good guys, but they've also gotten some major duds, potentially Scoot Henderson. I'm interested what you think about Scoot. I don't really have the highest projection on him at this point. I mean, I think he's been a little bit better this year, but like, he's not even the facilitator that people thought he would be, let alone the scoring guard. So he's been a major disappointment for me. Jeremy Grant, solid as ever. But generally, I think this is like a team that is trending towards mediocrity, which worries me quite a bit if I'm them. But they have some young pieces to build around.
You know, it's very interesting because I think I landed in a very similar place, which is if Scoot was who we thought he was going to be coming out of that draft, I think this is a really different conversation because I think they are all then the perfect type of long wings, switchable wings, athletic that you could surround him with, inclusive of some nice shooting with Simons and Shaden. And I think the recipe makes a ton of sense. But I land the same place where you land, which is like a great story. Probably never going to trust Ayton to do this kind of over an extended period of time. Obviously, he kind of puts out that level of effort and then gets hurt for an extended period of time. But I think Scoot is the issue, right? Which is the really the number one guy, the straw that stirs the drink. Probably still missing from the equation, but nice to see them play competitive basketball.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I almost wonder, like, if this is just the wrong time for them to be playing well, though. Like, I don't know where they are exactly in the standings, but they have to be trending the wrong direction, especially with teams in the East that are going to start really shitting the bed, like Brooklyn, Toronto, yeah. Charlotte, Washington, I mean, then like the Pelicans, Jazz, maybe, I don't know, maybe Dallas. Like, they have no reason to be winning games. So I worry if they keep trending upwards, they're going to miss a chance at like potentially a major prospect because this draft seems pretty loaded at the top. So, you know,
yeah, I mean,
from having another exciting young piece.
They're 23-31. They are 10 games better than the Jazz and 10 and a half games better than the Pelicans, right? So that's already a pretty sizable number, right? Especially when you contextualize that they're only 4.5 games back from the Warriors for the 10 seed from play-in. So, right, much closer there than they are to the first.
The Spurs almost.
Yeah, exactly. They're right in that same area as the Spurs. So an interesting first blind resume. Let's jump to the
one thing, even learning all of it, Portland. I'm not putting him on my television.
Yeah, it's fair. I have a soft spot for Shaden. I think he's a guy that could be a guy. So he, when he's in the starting lineup, which hasn't been much this year, I do like watching him. But I agree. Other than that, stylistically, it's not a brand of basketball that's super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you got to be something special for me to stay up late to watch your game.
I hear you. I hear you. All right. Let's jump to the next. So these next two teams, over the last 10 games, lead the league in defensive rating. They are number one and number two. One of these teams is 9-1 over that span, and also is averaging the highest net rating during that period of time, which is 14.1. They were missing key, the team that is leading, were missing key players. And the defense, when these players started missing, just skyrocketed out of nowhere. So let's start maybe with team number one, this team that's 9-1 during that stretch, best defense over the last 10. Who do we think that might be?
I think it's the Lakers.
It is the Lakers. Well done.
All right.
Let's add one to the tool belt there.
With guys missing games, yeah.
So I started to think about it, and I kind of landed at, like, coming up with a reasoning in my mind, but also being like, kind of what the heck is going on. It's a lot of Austin Reeves. It's a lot of LeBron. It's a lot of Jackson Hayes. There's been no AD during this stretch. The only kind of positive momentum was getting Jared Vanderbilt back on the defensive side, right? And he's playing around 15 games and introducing DFS to the table, who's like another big wing. And maybe there's this something here with big switchable wings with the two of them and Rui and then just LeBron and Reeves hiding appropriately. But it's not like they've played nobody. In that stretch, they played the Knicks, the Clippers, the Warriors, and Indiana. So other than like what's on the surface, what's your initial thoughts on this like defensive jump and really blowing out a lot of these teams in some of these games?
Well, I definitely don't have an answer for why they're playing good defense other than no effort really matters for defense. And I think that this team is like has a massive jolt of energy right now for obvious reasons. But also LeBron is playing like out of his mind. And I don't think there's a player in the NBA who other guys, especially young guys who grew up watching LeBron, want to like just bust their ass for the guy. And so I think that makes a huge difference, honestly. Like if you think about these young players, they were like in kindergarten when LeBron started playing. So, yeah, I think that makes a big difference. What do you think?
I think it's some of the personnel. I do think having Vanderbilt come in just to be a ball stopper does help. But I think you hit the nail on the head, right? It goes back to like if LeBron tries on defense, I think the effort from everybody else is just – it's an exponential relationship, right? And when they see him hustling, I think they just come to work differently. And I watched the blowout win over the Warriors, and I watched the win over the Clippers and the Knicks in those times. And I think their defense leads to transition offense. And I actually think Austin Reeves is one of the more underrated open floor transition creators. He just has a knack for making the right pass or pulling the right shot. And I think him plus LeBron and obviously now plus Luka in that circumstance, I think it's an offense improves the defense and defense improves the offense thing. And they do have that like a little bit like a ball rolling down a hill, right? Sort of thing where once it starts going, it cascades on top of each other and the two feed each other really nicely.
Yeah, I agree. I just looked at Jackson Hayes is actually playing really good defense. At the center position, his defensive field goal percentage is under 46, which is pretty solid. I mean, it's actually really good, which gives him a net positive on his own field goal percentage. That's pretty good. But again, like we were talking at the beginning of the podcast, like that's not sustainable, I don't think, especially as he's going to have to start guarding better and better centers, which he probably hasn't been all year. So the data is kind of skewed that way. But like last game, I don't know, like Luka was guarding John Collins, which I thought was interesting. And I don't even remember how much Jackson Hayes was against Walker Kessler. I can't remember now. But yeah, we have some tougher matchups coming up.
I think it'll be interesting to kind of keep a pulse on of what they're able to do. Maybe a little credit to JJ as well for kind of putting themselves in position and knowing what buttons to push on the right night. But yeah, I think there's some pieces around the edges that defensively make sense, and it'll be interesting to see how that proceeds.
Yeah.
All right. So the Lakers are number two defensively with a 108.1 defensive rating. Team that's number one is a full 1.6 points better at 106.5. They're 5-5 during that spread. They are by far the slowest playing team in the NBA at 93.5 from a pace score, which is kind of like to contextualize that, the Bulls on the season are at 116, right? So just really not even close to like moving the ball at any sort of speed. And they had wins, back-to-back wins over Houston, a win over Miami, and two wins over Charlotte during that time. They did have one bad loss to Washington, but other than that, no other bad losses. Who do you think this team might be?
So until you said who they beat and lost to, I was going to say Detroit. But it's not Detroit because I watched them just obliterate our blood. Let's think about it. You know what? I'm going with the Claw. Clippers.
No, it is the Brooklyn Nets.
My God.
Yep. Okay. The right. Brooklyn Nets. So for this Nets team, the best defenders on their roster, and this is kind of based on defensive rating from best going down, are Trenton Wofford, De'Aaron Schott, Tosun, don't know how to pronounce his last name, Zaire Williams, D'Angelo Russell, Tyrese Martin, Reese Beekman, and Jalen Wilson. And like, some of these guys have been really good. Watford's been good. Zaire Williams has sparked and played well. D'Angelo Russell hit some big shots in that win over the Rockets, which was an absolute choke job in the second one by the Rockets. And this is my moment to do nothing else but give Jordy Fernandez some kudos. This team should be losing by 50 points every single night. Agreed. Every single night. But he is too good of a coach for them to tank how well they should tank. They have now traded away a lot of their best players, and they still are unable to tank. They started the year too well. They continue to win games. And I love that he every night coaches them up. He pulls different levers. He plays different players. And he's doing the job of a coach, which is to make the team better. And I know it's kind of a tough one because it contextualizes against what is probably best for the organization long term. And I'm sure he's going to get a call in a couple of days from the front office kind of changing that perspective. But I think we should give the guy his flowers right now that he's managed to put together over a 10-game stretch the best defense in the NBA with those guys on the roster.
It's funny you say that. So there were like a couple hypotheses going through my mind because I absolutely just refuse to believe that this is a good defensive team. And the first is that our team's just like benching their best players against the Nets. I don't think that's the case, though. I really don't. Because like
two games, it's not.
Were like pretty healthy. Like Şengün played, Jalen Green played, Tyman Thompson played. So it's not that. I have absolutely no idea. Other than I will never watch them. So put them in the category with Portland. But I do love Cam Johnson. I do think that it was really weird that they chose not to trade him, which maybe makes me think that they really do believe in what they have. You know, with him and Claxton, like Claxton's a great defensive center if he can stay on the court.
Yeah.
In like 20 minutes a game. But Cam Johnson like could be like, you know, your second best scorer on a good team for sure. And they're stacked with draft picks. So they're not that worried about their own pick. Like they've got 100 Knicks picks. They've got Houston picks. They've got the Suns picks. They have maybe a bright future. I mean, at least something to be optimistic about. I don't know. Do you watch them at all?
I watched a little bit of it, and it's definitely like stylistically a boring brand of basketball, but I think that was going to be the next point. I was going to make you sort of hit on it. I sort of like them not trading Cam for the reason of, I think rebuilding teams sometimes go too far that direction and don't have an adult in the room, right, that actually can help organize and kind of run a flow. I think the Rockets are a perfect example, right, where their rebuild, I think, took a year longer than we would expect them to because of A, coaching, right? Silas wasn't the guy for the job. And you had all of these draft assets thinking that they were the guy, right? Like, I'm not sure, but having Kevin Porter Jr. as your most tenured player on your team probably was not a good idea for the Rockets. And I think the Nets are actually doing a really practical job of creating a system and structure that Jordy Fernandez is in charge of. He has a guy like Cam Johnson, right? Yes, I know D'Angelo Russell isn't going to be kind of the winning player, but I think he fits in that type of culture. We've seen him succeed around young guys in Brooklyn before, right? In the rebuild before they kind of press the eject button. So, like, I think running back that same playbook without those types of players makes a lot of sense. And I actually think building winning skills is an important one. So I don't hate it. And I actually sort of like that that's the path that they've gone.
And I think Cam Thomas might be a guy. Like,
yeah.
If we don't know, he just hasn't played much this year at all, but
right.
Could be like a legit 25 point a game scorer. So yeah, they've got some things to be excited about. Shocked to hear it about the defense though.
Yeah. Kind of mind blowing. That's for sure.
Wow. Just look, they're holding the Sixers. They suck, but they're holding them to 82 points tonight with 4 minutes left in the game. I mean, yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And part of it's, and they're winning, right? They're up nine.
Yeah.
Yeah. More of that. Now the Sixers, I mean, that's another story. We can talk about this another time, but no Joel, no Tyrese Maxey. Do you want to guess Paul George's line right now?
3 points. He's so bad.
He's got 2 points. There's 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter without the two other best players.
Dude. Well, Maxey had a bad game last night too, and then you found out today he like banged knees early in the game.
Knees. Yeah.
Wow. Hopefully he'll be back soon. I mean, he's having an amazing year, but that team is so freaking
he's bad. The fact that he can keep his joy on the basketball court is beyond impressive because he seems like just a good human.
I think he's pretty sick of Embiid though.
Yeah, I would be too. All right, let's knock out our last two blind resumes here. I intentionally picked these teams because I think they're in a very weird way similar, and I'll get to it. So the first one is a team that is 3-2 over the last five. Over that time, they have a negative 3.8 net rating, and they are smack dab in the middle. Exactly 14th on offense and 16th on defense. They did have wins over Western Conference foes, Dallas, the Pelicans, and Minnesota, but lost to Portland and Orlando. Any thoughts who that might be?
Yeah, I know that one's the Kings because I watched that Dallas game.
That is the Kings. You are correct.
Yeah, dude, I love the Kings right now. I do. I texted you the other night after I watched that Dallas game because I was like really jacked up on them. They have some serious flaws, but they're one of the most fun offenses to watch. Like Sabonis is such a fun offensive center, Jokic light. Then you've got Zach LaVine and DeRozan who carry over the chemistry from their amazing bowl seasons. Malik Monk playing like the full-time point guard is actually working. And the one piece that's missing, who I think sucks, is Keegan Murray. The Keegan Murray experience is over for me. He's a lost cause. He looks absolutely lost out there. I have no idea what position he plays. He has no idea what position he plays. He doesn't play the same kind of like lanky, athletic, improvisation basketball that the rest of those four guys play really, really well. And so maybe he needs to move to the bench and just be running the bench unit where he can do whatever it might be that he does well. And I don't even know what it is, but he could like do it maybe. That's vague. But overall, I think that I see the Kings doing the best version of what we saw the Bulls GM talk about the other day, which is have a bunch of like really good players and win. And I think that they are the best version of that and still are not going to win. So that's just like frustrating. It's like really fun to watch. They look like they're having a good time. The fans love it. But they're just not going to, I mean, they're going to be like in play in purgatory forever or like maybe the 6 seed. That's it.
So I know people have done this, but I want to take it to the next level. And I want to upfront acknowledge that Domantas Sabonis is a better basketball player than Nikola Vucevic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just take that on its face. So whatever the Bulls' ceiling was when they ran this exact same playbook, the Kings is going to be a little bit higher. But considering that two of the players are the – let's take the Bulls from 2023, right? Obviously, LaVine and DeRozan are the exact same because they're LaVine and DeRozan. We can start getting on the Patrick Williams comps. to Keegan Murray.
Yeah, I almost just did that, yeah.
We can get going on the fact that Coby White and Malik Monk are flavors of the same type of player. I think Malik Monk's a better basketball player, yeah, but they're the same flavor. You have Io and Keegan Ellis taking the exact same role on the bench. And then you have like an X factor in terms of Devon Carter and Lonzo Ball, where you're not sure exactly what you're going to get from them, but they're like that fun, youthful energy that you could inject into the team. So I just find it hilarious that, like, yes, Sabonis is different. I acknowledge that. But I think you're exactly right, which is like the Kings are the same as the Bulls, which is one of those markets is in Sacramento, California, and one of them is in Chicago. And yeah, that is just such – the fact that this is a win for the Kings – and the iteration of it is better because of Sabonis is just such a scathing review on what the Bulls did with that same type of talent.
I couldn't agree more, and I had the same exact thoughts when I was watching the game. And, like,
this it's is fun.
Pathetic. Like, I wouldn't, you know, I would be so happy just, like, having that as my team right now.
Like, again, yeah.
Sabonis is a different player than Vucevic. I get what you're saying. Like, he facilitates the offense so much better, which the Bulls never really had. Like, once Alonzo got hurt, they didn't really have someone to run the offense that well. But, yeah, the parallels are extremely similar. We suck. I mean, we just absolutely freaking suck. And the Kings are going to be really fun. And I hope that they do make the playoffs. I hope that they're rewarded for, like, trying. In a way that not many other teams do, other than, and I don't want to maybe guess the team that you're gonna do next, but they almost like remind me of what Toronto is trying to do. Like, with this Brandon Ingram trade, and they signed him for $40 million a year for the next 3 years. What a mistake that is. But they're trying to have the same exact thing. Like, these long, fun, quick players who maybe fit on the court together and can have fun. If you put, like, Chris Boucher in at center instead of Jakob Poeltl, it's like basically it's like close to the same makeup as the Kings, but I don't know if that's like what you're trying to do. Like, the Kings have found themselves in this position. Like, the moves that they've made, they traded Haliburton for Sabonis, they've, you know, dumped Fox, but that was going to be a bad situation. Like, I can't really blame them for the moves they've made. I don't know, but largely, like, this has kind of happened to them to some extent.
Sure.
Toronto's, like, done it to themselves. It's just, it's hard to watch. It's hard to watch.
You know, I didn't go to Toronto for the last one, but it was another team that had did it to themselves, and I actually was going to end with the Mavericks over the last five games, which they are exactly the inverse of the Kings, where they have a slightly above average, or they have a little bit of a better offense recently and actually a worse defense. And I think they're actually, in a way, rolling out lineups that are similar, just less talented. And it's a result of the exact position they put himself in. Now, I think it also demonstrates what happens to the team when you four of your like seven best players are injured. So I want to give them kind of some grace. But the reality of this iteration of the Dallas Mavs that I wanted to just close this little section is they are playing like the Kings. They are playing like the Raptors. The results of this season is they are going to find themselves at best in the 9 or the 10 spot. And it is just such a critical error. I know we started with it. I don't think we can say it enough.
Yeah.
This is like you don't do this. What they did is simply wrong. It's mispractice.
I think that they're going to miss the play-in. I just think that the West is too competitive. Like, seeds 4 through 9 is just way too competitive for them to keep it up. And you, like, at any time, Kyrie could just, like, be like, I'm very much sick of this. I'm done, and you're trading.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah. It could happen whenever. You're so right.
Yeah. And then they're stuck with what? You know, Klay, who I just feel so bad for. Our beloved Klay Thompson. He does not deserve this to rot away there.
He doesn't deserve it. I think they play tonight, the Mavs and the Warriors. Yeah, I think that's right now. So that'll be interesting to see. Well, that wraps up the first iteration of the Blind Resume game. I think we'll bring it back. Maybe we'll let the rest of the fellas jump in on it next time. But we'll throw some different questions out there. Next topic we wanted to go to, and listen, I'll give credit where credit's due for all listening at home. This is a Ian Katz original topic brought to the forefront.
Wow.
And we wanted to go through our early take on the all NBA teams, right? And kind of go back and forth through each of our teams, see where we're on the same page and see where we might be slightly off. So with that, do you want to, so I'll be up front. I still like to have two guards and three front court players on my team, right? I know that there's the positionless thing. So I did build all three teams that have two guards, three front court. That meant I could use two centers on some if I needed to, but that is the structure of how I put my team together.
Yes, I didn't. Well, no, I didn't do that. I did it for teams one and two.
Okay.
Not for the third team, but I was actually going to open that with a question about what you think about that. So my opinion is I hate the positionless.
Me too.
Approach. I think two guards and three front court makes total sense. I don't think you need a center position.
Agreed.
I agree with that. I don't think you need like a primary point guard, ball handler. I think just two guard, two front court, two back court, two front court.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can be reasonable about it, right? Like, it doesn't need to be too hard. Jaylen Brown can be a front court player. That's fine. I'm not going to be offended by the fact that he plays the three for the. For them, yeah, he'd be a two on some of their teams. We can call him a three. That's fine. He's not on my team. But, like, I don't need the full positionless thing.
And, like, Luka, I think, threw just a loop for everybody. Well, it's like, figure it out.
Yeah. You know? I mean, he plays point guard. Just call him a guard. It's fine.
Yeah, call him a guard.
Yeah. Everybody else needs to be better. Doesn't matter that we're taking away a spot from somebody else.
No, I totally agree. The reason I wanted to do this exercise, I feel like this is the first time in a bunch of years that I don't feel like it's that clear this late in the season.
I felt for my first team, I agree with you. Once I got to the second team, I actually found it to be really, really hard. For my first team, I felt very good about four out of the five spots.
Let's hear it.
I thought locks for me were SGA, Tatum, Giannis, and Jokic.
Okay. So I completely agree. However, I don't think Giannis is going to make it to 65 games.
I was looking at that. If he comes back and plays like 85, 90% of the rest of the games, I think he gets right there. It's going to be really close, though.
So I left him off just for that reason. But he's absolutely in the first team if he makes the threshold of 65, and I think that it's actually has to make 63. Is that right? Or he has to do like 65 but two like
yeah
games or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something like that where you just appear in half those games. Yes, exactly.
All right, so for the sake of conversation, I'm leaving him out, but he definitely would be on the first team for me if he makes that threshold.
Okay.
Who's your fifth?
So before I go there, I just wanted to kind of say, I think this MVP race is going to be insane this year. Like, yeah. SGA is starting to put up counting stats, at least in some of the advanced metrics that are equally as it out of this world. I think Jokic is the best basketball player in this world. I know he is. He is the best. But the Thunder have nine losses, right? And, like, they might end the year with 65 wins. If they end the year with 65 wins, and, like, Shea is a plus minus a 13.4 on the year. Just, like, close to the best ever. It's just, he is the best defensive net rating, third best defensive rating, best net rating for any NBA guy over 25 minutes. I just think it's going to be fascinating. And I wonder if people decide that this is the year it's going to be SGA's, right? And that's the only thing that changes the narrative. But I think between the two of them, it's going to be really cool to see what it comes down to.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the only thing going for Jokic against SGA is that, like, Jokic is that team. And, like, yeah, that team's going to get 450 wins, maybe 55, 50, I don't know, 52, 53, something like that. I personally would lean SGA, I think, this year for everything you said. And I don't want to play too much into the narrative, like, whose turn it is and this, that.
Right.
But, like, that's what the NBA has been.
Like, we totally
have a Westbrook MVP. We have a Joel Embiid MVP. Like, Joel Embiid won an MVP over Jokic. over Giannis. Like, that's insane. That's just insane. And I hope that never happens again, even though I'm sure it will. Not with Embiid, but somebody else.
The good thing this year is I think we could at least be comfortable with SGA resulting in it. Like, I would, that one I would look back and say that makes sense. But alas, I've gone a little sideways. The last guy I have in there is for my second guard spot. And I really, really struggled with it, but I ended up going Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, same. Same.
So there's something, and I think it's like, for me, it's a little bit extrapolating the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks of play, because it's pretty clear that Julius Randle should not be on the court when Anthony Edwards is on the court. Like, yeah, there's no surprise that this transcendent period of play has gone with more space and going to Naz Reid, who spaces the floor and moves the ball, versus Julius Randle. But with that aside, over the last 5 games, he's averaged 33.8 and he's shooting 14 threes a game. And he's single-handedly the only reason that the Wolves are in contention. And they're up to, I believe, the 6th seed, right, in the West now, after being in kind of that play-in purgatory.
Yeah.
He's a plus defender, and he's legitimately the only reason that this is all happening. And I'm sort of projecting that trajectory to continue. And obviously, it's not going to be 38.8, but if it does, I feel pretty good about that.
He's an unbelievable defender and an outstanding three-point shooter. Like, both sides of the ball does stuff that not many other people do in the NBA, and he's like 22 years old. Yeah, I thought he was the best fit. I'm sure on the second team we'll get into guys who just missed that first team.
Yeah.
So without Giannis in there, I went with Wemby as my 5th guy.
Interesting.
I think he's earned it. I think he's defensive player of the year. I think that he is rapidly becoming an offensive engine in ways that I didn't expect this quickly to happen. And he's just so freaking fun to watch, man. I think he is well deserving of borderline first team, second team.
I won't argue with it. I think I would go a different route, but it would be really close. I can see making the argument for it.
I know what you want there.
Yeah, we've spoken about him together. I think our mutual love affair is pretty well known. But before I jump to it, why don't you give me who your other two, so who your three front court guys are on your second team?
So the three front court guys I have on the second team are LeBron James.
Okay.
Jaren Jackson Jr. and Karl Anthony Towns.
Interesting. All right. I also, not surprisingly, have Jaren Jackson Jr., and he was going to be the one that would, I think, maybe make first team for me if Giannis doesn't qualify for the games. I think we've talked about him enough. I don't need to talk about him some more, but I think the fact that he's played every single game for them, I think, bar one, and is net 10.7 on the year. He's shooting the ball great. He's a disruptive. He's their identity, and they've like really embraced it. Ja doesn't play. He's not playing again tonight. He doesn't.
The best player, far and away the best player, on a team that has no business being as good as they are.
Exactly. So I don't need to make much of a case. I'm actually interested in your LeBron case, because Cat was my first forward off this list. I do also have LeBron on my third team. Okay. But I'm interested in your LeBron case for why he's second team.
This is like maybe just like too nostalgic of me, but he still got it. Like, his numbers are not a fall off from last year, and he was on the third team last year.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't missed an All-NBA team in 20 years. And I don't think I'm ready to leave him off. It's really as simple as that. I mean, he's going to lead this team into the playoffs. I really think they end up with like the 4th seed. And he's doing it on both sides of the ball. Like, he's still that guy who on any given possession can be an absolute stopper and then facilitate a score on the other end. He can't do that ever, like, all game anymore. But he's one of the few guys who can still do that, like, at an elite, elite level, like Anthony Edwards can. Which is why he's for sure a first teamer, like Tatum can, like, you know, I mean, even like how Kobe could later in his career, like he could still put it on and be like a stopper and then score on the other end. Giannis can do it. Like, this is what separates like the best players in the NBA from everybody else, and he can still do it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think I skewed a little bit more defensively in terms of this. So I have Wemby, I have Triple J. I went back and forth between LeBron and Cat, who are both on my third team, and I ended up going Mobley. And he to me, so I do have, and we'll get to the guards as well, but I included two Cavs on my second team. And I think I want to reward the individual performance, but also acknowledge individual performance that contributes to winning. And for me, Mobley is the epitome of that. Other than the three guys on the Thunder, he leads the league in net, right? So he's at net 14.2 when he's on the court, which is incredible. He is up to 19 points per game. He's knocking down over a three a game this year. He's close to two blocks a game. He's a true eraser at the rim. Like true rim presence. And he actually, in a way, makes their offense work, right? He is the guy that actually unlocks a lot of that short roll action with Donovan Mitchell, allows Jared Allen to like just do the dirty work on the offensive glass, but he also can space that team. He's like a little bit of that X factor type of player that I think we don't reward enough. And I think his overall contributions this year have made the Cavs who they are, right? And I think the like we give a lot of credit to Donovan Mitchell for stepping back, right? And yes, some of that usage goes to Darius Garland, but the guy who picks up most of that is Evan Mobley. And I think he's the reason why that they've kind of made that leap. And I think because of that, I wanted to reward it on the second team. Now that could change as the year goes on. But I think if I was casting a ballot today, that's where I have it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on Mobley. I have him as my first front court guy on the third team. And one thing that I love about him is that I think he's shown flashes of this through every year of his career, but he's always suffered a little bit from like disappearance syndrome. Like there's certain games where he's not just a non-factor, like he's an actual negative on the court, and he's just not doing
Yeah.
that anymore. Like
No.
he'll still have a few down games, but he's not having games where he's a total dud. He can lean into one part of his game and be really successful. Like that one, it's kind of funny because he did both things. Like on one game against the Thunder earlier in the season, he was just like unbelievable. Both sides of the
Yeah.
ball, facilitating offense, scoring, playing great defense. And then in the second game against the Thunder, he was nowhere to be found. I mean, he was like
No.
terrible, but the whole team was bad. The whole
Yeah,
team.
no, nobody on the, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So I'm not putting that on him, but yeah, largely he's gotten rid of the whatever was plaguing him on like the off nights, where he's like consistently just an outstanding basketball player. I think he. It's funny that you have Mitchell here on the second team also. At least I assume it's Mitchell. Maybe it's Garland, but I assume it's
Yeah.
Mitchell. I felt like Mobley was a no-brainer for this list more than Mitchell.
So I had three guys for two spots on the second team. And I like could have gone for hours and I decided to just pick. I'm interested. Who are your two guards before I go to mine?
I've got Jalen Brunson, and I've got your boy. I've got Cade.
Yeah, I went Cade and Mitchell and put Brunson on the third team. And like I think if I actually looked at it again and had to like if you said change one thing, I would probably flop Brunson and Mitchell and be on the same page as you. But like the three of them, their statistical profile is almost identical. I think Cade is just asked to do more with less around him than the other two, and that's why I wanted to reward him.
I think that's totally reasonable. I felt weird having both Cat and Brunson on the second team. But I feel like the two of them have just been so good together. I mean, it's really like a
Yeah.
match in heaven. Cat's playing like the best basketball of his career, and I think he should be rewarded for that. Brunson's just a winning player. I mean, he's just an absolute winner, and his footwork is unlike pretty much anyone, maybe other than like Kyrie in the league. He's just unbelievable. So I was gonna ask, did you include KD in this, or you assume he's not gonna make the game threshold either?
No, so I do have him on my third team.
Okay.
So I pretty much have given you my third team. Brunson, I agree with everything you just said. I listen, I think just to give a little bit love to Mitchell, right? Like He is still at 24 points a game, 45% from the field, 40 from three, 4.8 assists, and he is their go-to guy in crunch time. So like he's a really good basketball player. I think it has been impressive that he's taken a step back. All of them are having awesome years. Between the three of them, I think it's really exciting for Eastern Conference guards as we go. But yeah, I had LeBron, Durant, and Cat as my front court on my third team. I think if Durant didn't get there, my replacement's Pascal Siakam currently. And then I looked at it for a while and I said, am I really going to choose Darius Garland over Steph? And I said, no. So I chose Steph as my last guard.
So I'm right there with you. Siakam was my first out, so I'm gonna put him in to match the structure. So I've got Mobley. Yeah, so I did the same thing with KD. So I have
Right.
KD like kind of an asterisk. I'm not really
Sure.
sure who I'd put in outside of that, but I have Mobley, KD, and Siakam as the front court.
Okay.
And then the back court, I found this to be really, really tough. I was choosing between Garland, Curry, James Harden, Lillard, Maxey. So Mitchell's in there for sure. So it's really just like
Yeah.
choosing this last spot, and I went with Damian Lillard. Really because he's just like carried the Bucks through a lot. And I think he's responsible for a lot of the winning this year, unlike last year, which really just fell on Giannis still. He's played like out of his mind. So I went with Lillard, but I think you can make a case for any of these guys. I hope Curry makes it to the 65 games. I'm not sure he will either. He has to play like pretty much all of his games, I think, on the way out, which he's motivated to do now. So
Right.
hopefully he will. And then Kyrie I had is like an asterisk too, but even if he makes the 65, I don't think he's making it for me.
I mean, he would if he like drags them to the eighth seed, then
Yeah.
yeah, he probably ends up on this list, right?
Yeah.
I think, and then I also think then the same thing would be said true about Steph, right? Like, I think Dame's upside in terms of their positioning isn't as high because he gets the benefit of a middle tier that's a little bit weaker in the Eastern Conference. But like, yeah, Steph drags them to the four or the five, him and Butler together. I think there's very much, to your point, a little bit room. But I do think the first, second team for the most part, right? And obviously there's that second team, that guard spot. I think it is up in there, but I think we have a little bit of quite a bit of overlap and quite a bit of structure in terms of what
Yeah.
we've seen so far and what we'd expect to see down the
Man,
stretch.
I've got quick trivia for you though.
Hit me.
So, of the guys we mentioned, how many of them do you think were first-time All-NBA players?
Ooh, so I would say Cade would be first time. Triple J would be first time. Mobley and Wemby. So that's four there. And then, yeah, that'd be it. Maybe
Yeah.
Cat? No,
Well,
Cat's got it.
this would be Cat's third if he made it.
Okay, yeah.
It would be Maxey's first if he makes it. But otherwise, like pretty much all these other guys have been on it before, which I found to be kind of interesting because I feel like year to year we talk about how like the talent's never been better, the young guys are just like getting better faster, all this stuff. It's kind of stagnant at the top. You know, it's there's guys who sneak in. Like last year, Brunson and Haliburton were the only guys that were new on the
Right.
NBA teams. Haliburton's definitely not getting back this year. I mean, who knows if he ever does? I mean, he's so young, who knows? But you know, I'm happy to see Brunson and Ant's gonna be a staple on here for the next decade, at least.
Well, I think the one name we didn't give enough love to, Tatum's been incredible this year. This is going to be his fourth first team All NBA in a row.
Yeah.
He is. I think we went into this year being like everybody. There's 1A, 1B, two wings, like. It has not been that at all. Jaylen Brown's been bad most of the year.
Yep.
Porzingis has been their second best player for most of the year. And Tatum has just
Ooh.
he's single-handedly carried the rock
I would say
for
Jaylen
that, a
Brown
lot of
is our second best player. I think he's amazing.
I have a love affair, but just like in counting stats, Porzingis definitely does more. But yeah, I think in terms of impact, right? Honestly, Peyton Pritchard might be their second best player, but we don't need to go that far. It's been incredible.
No, it's interesting. I completely agree. And when you mentioned Tatum as like a lock for first team, I completely agree. For me, it's
Right.
SGA, Tatum, and Giannis if he gets there. But I think, is Tatum going to be like the best player of this era to never win an MVP? Because I just don't see him winning one. Like, he might end up with like two or three finals MVPs, but I just don't see him winning a regular season MVP, even though he is so unbelievably good every single year.
The only way is if Jokic retires in the next 3 years, just decides he's done playing basketball. And then I could see, to your exact point, Tatum getting the, oh, it's his turn MVP over an SGA internet.
But he already won a title, which is crazy. Like, I feel like that doesn't usually happen because guys are usually like, you know, 28, 29 when they win the finals. Yeah. But they're younger when they win their first MVP. We saw it with Giannis. We saw it with Jokic. We saw it with who else? Kevin Durant. So like.
Yeah. Kawhi.
I'm sorry.
Kawhi as well.
Yeah. 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 So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think Jaylen Brown's the youngest finals MVP ever last year. Is that right?
I would need to double check, but I remember him being up there in terms of on that list.
Kobe, maybe. I can't remember now. But anyway, yeah, it's still an old man's league. We talked about it last week at the trade deadline. Like,
yeah,
talking about Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron, all these years later.
I'll sign off on this. If I just kind of rewind a bit, I'm going to go back to my first ever prediction on this podcast. And it was that the Warriors and the Cavs are going to make the conference finals this year. And I'm now like going back and just kind of saying a prayer every night for Steph's ankles and someone to continue to slight Jimmy every other week so he stays pissed. Cause I'm really, really excited to see how that Warriors team comes together and what those playoff draws look like in the Western Conference. Cause I think we're going to get an awesome, awesome early Western Conference playoffs. Like, all time matchups, and I think that's really something to look forward to as we move forward through the back half of the year here.
Good.
Awesome. Well, another pleasurable hour running the we'll say pick and pop here. As always, this was Below the Rim. Appreciate everybody for listening, and we will talk to you all before you know it. Have a great rest of your night.